News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Tomorrow with Feinbaum will be Football Friday in the 8 o'clock hour. I guess it's Football Thursday today.
Yeah, it is.
That's okay.
With Michael Knapp with UMS Wright. We'll talk with him about what we have coming up on the air tomorrow night and have had for the last two Fridays as FM Talk 106.5, the new home for UMS Wright Bulldogs football. Good morning, Coach Knapp.
Good morning, Dan, Dalton. How are we?
Hey, we're doing good.
We're doing great. And I know both of you guys focused on the same teams this week as UMS Wright travels to play at St. Michael Catholic, a Cardinals team that had a bye week after a week one where both UMS and St. Michael took on teams, well, from out of state. And UMS Wright coming up just short in a comeback against Jackson Prep out of Mississippi, while St. Michael fell to Battleground Academy out of Tennessee. But then last Friday, and what a great call again, Coach Knapp, with you and Kevin Raley. What a game with Mountain Brook, a defensive slugfest after a high-scoring week one.
Yeah, you would think a game that finishes 13-6 was, you know, kind of dull and boring to watch. It was anything but that. There were so many big momentum plays, particularly on our side, that just were so much fun to watch. A blocked field goal returned for a touchdown by Colby Weaver, a spectacular interception by Benjamin Massey to set up the go-ahead touchdown. Max Fowler found Dean Wade on a wheel route. And, man, just a gutsy, gutsy performance from the Bulldogs. In a game where offensively, you know, Mountain Brook was creating a lot of trouble for us, but found just enough to come away with a victory over a ranked 5A team.
Yeah, go ahead, Dalton.
Well, I was going to say, you know, this UMS team now has some momentum after picking up that win last week and facing a team that is trying to find some momentum as their year really gets underway here. And St. Michael, you wouldn't think they would need a week off in that second week, but they certainly did with Gunnar Rivers going down with an injury in that first week. Not sure whether he's ready to go or not tomorrow night, but quite the matchup we have.
Yeah, you know, in the SEC, you have to release your injury reports, and in the NFL, in high school, you do not have to do that.
No, you do not.
The suspense will lift about the first offensive series for St. Michael when we see who runs out there at quarterback. You know, their first opening game, probably not a great indicator of where they are. Mm-hmm. He went out early in that first quarter, and that certainly changed everything they wanted to do. And also, that's probably, you know, one of the best teams they'll play all season on their schedule. Battleground has, you know, some elite D1 talent on their team. And, I don't know that that's a great indicator of what we'll see tomorrow night, whether Gunner plays or not.
Yeah, Battleground's got two future SEC receivers, the best way I saw it. Those guys could go.
And yeah, they really could.
I mean, if you are not as fast as the guy you're trying to cover, it's kind of over. And that's what St. Michael was facing with the Battleground. And of course, Gunner getting hurt. You know, if he stayed in the game, maybe they could have been involved in a shootout and kept it close. But that was the end of that when he got hurt for sure. I was talking with your coach Sam Williams, and he said it was very interesting that in your first game in Jackson, that team played zero coverage. And what that means is basically no deep safeties at all, just playing man-to-man and challenging you. And that gave you the opportunity to kind of get back in that game, I guess, in some ways. That's quite you don't run into many teams that play zero coverage the whole game. And then the next week with Mountain Brook, much more of a conventional defense. It kind of kept everything in front of you. I know Mountain Brook's a very physical team. That had to be quite a challenge.
Well, if you're going to play cover zero, you're counting on some cornerback play that's really, really special.
Right.
But also what it allows you to do is it allows you to stack extra guys in the box for quarterback hurries, for, you know, getting guys in the backfield. And so, you know, it's definitely a cat and mouse game, but our offense had a big night over in Jackson. We scored 35 points. Mm-hmm. Ty Mabry had four touchdown receptions, so we did hurt them. Our defense was not very good that night, just to put it bluntly. This week, after, I assume, a week of heavy emphasis on physicality on the defensive side, man, our defense was just lights out. One of the most fun things to watch in that game was they had a first and goal inside the five, and we held them, mm-hmm. forced a field goal, tried to block it, roughed the kicker, So now they're at the 2.5. They go another 3 downs with a goal line stand, and then we blocked that field goal attempt for the return to tie the game.
Wow.
It was just an incredible defensive series, and you could see, you know, you could see the payoff from the week of practice and what the defense learned that week. It was an incredible defensive performance.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and props to you and Coach Kevin Raley, because listening on the radio, it was just as suspenseful as being there in person, and probably even better if you're able to make it out to those games and have a little radio you can keep on you and listen to the call while the game is going on. And you can do that again tomorrow night as the broadcast will get started at 6:30 with the pregame from coaches Michael Knapp and Kevin Raley, and then kickoff right around 7. We're looking forward to this, the third game of UMS Wright's season, but getting that regional play started should be a good one tomorrow night, Coach Knapp.
It should be. Region play is always just a you know, not that these were preseason games, because they certainly weren't, they counted, but these count a lot more in terms of seeding for the playoffs. And St. Michael is they were the preseason number one team in AA. So we'll have our work cut out for us, but I know we'll be prepared, and I'm excited to bring you guys the broadcast.
Excellent. And one word of caution, and I'm sure I'll see you over there before the game, but a lot of the talk about Rivers, the quarterback, but that running back, Nigel Mitchell, I don't know.
Yeah, he's good.
Man, he's good. And he's
good.
Big as a minute. Maybe he might be, you know, 5'8", 185, something like that. He's got college running back written all over him, man. That is one shifty, great vision, tough, fast. I think he's got everything.
Well, explosive plays are always something that we track and monitor, and it's one of those things that when you look at percentages, the team with the more explosive plays wins the game, you know, 85% of the time, explosive being over 20 yards, and he is a big-time explosive play threat for those guys. Probably more so if Gunner's not playing and they have to rely on him a little more. That will certainly be a key to our night.
Well, we appreciate it. I'll see you over at the Nest on Friday night. Looks like maybe a little rain, so we'll prepare for that. And good luck with the broadcast.
Friday afternoon on the Bayway. I can't wait.
That's my life, man. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Be good.
All right, Michael Knapp, you can hear him on the call with Kevin Raley, and that starts at 6:30 tomorrow night. And if you want to listen starting at 6, you can listen tomorrow morning to Football Fridays with Feinbaum at 8 o'clock, like we always do, presented by Bryant Bank. We'll start our season then, but we'll re-air that tomorrow night at 6, and then a little extra with Dan and myself leading into that 6:30 pregame with UMS Wright taking on St. Michael. 251-343-0106, and a lot to talk about this morning, and a lot of you talking with us on the text line as well. I know our lead story having to do with the banners on Government Street, and a couple months ago, you know, the National Pride Month banners going up, and what the city was doing was kind of like we saw them attempt with the cannon just a few years ago, where private organizations can pay to, I guess at that point it was paint the cannon. For this one, it was to put up banners along Government Street. And, you know, in Pride Month, they put up the rainbow banners, and people took issue with that, as you always see, including Pastor Travis Johnson, who's been a guest on with Jeff Poor for years now, right here on FM Talk 106.5, and also so happens to be on the Visit Mobile board.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said he wasn't happy with them allowing that back in June because, well, not all Mobilians feel that National Pride Month is something that should be represented using city abilities,
funds,
right?
Yeah. So
it's privately funded,
right,
but the city's allowing it to go up.
Yeah.
So that kind of got quiet after a big blow up in June. And then here we are in September, which is National Child Awareness Month, and what Pastor Travis Johnson did was fund some private banners that say National Child Awareness Month. They have the American flag kind of there in the background, and then the silhouette of a female with four children all holding hands, and a steeple and cross behind them in the far background. But below National Child Awareness Month, it says Protect Our Children from Gender Ideology. Now, that news broke. I don't know when the banners, I guess they officially went up on the 1st of September, which was Tuesday. And then yesterday morning, I saw the story in 1819 News that those banners were up. Well, by yesterday afternoon, city spokesperson Dale Leash said that, well, the city is going to rethink who gets space on city-owned poles. And he said the banners were paid for by Travis Johnson. You had Prism United, a Mobile-based nonprofit supporting LGBTQ youth, who criticized these new banners, the gender ideology banners. They criticized it in a public statement, claiming the message was targeting their community. The banners on Government Street do the opposite of celebrating our expansive community. Their function is to isolate, to sow division, to make us smaller. And Prism pointed to Pride Art Walk as an example of Mobile's broader community identity, saying that the event is consistently one of the most well-attended art walks of the year. The group stated LGBTQ people have long been portrayed as a threat to children and said the banner's language continues that rhetoric by presenting LGBTQ visibility as something children need to be protected from. They said it was untrue then and it is untrue now. Also, there was some commentary in this Lanyap story, if I can find it. Let's see. I thought we had further commentary here. Maybe not. You know, I might have read that from another one.
And we've heard this all along the way because Travis Johnson is probably once a month or maybe occasionally if the it calls for. More often than that, I guess, with Jeff Poor on the Jeff Poor Show, which follows ours. So I heard that comment. I heard his concern back in June with the
Pride Month banners.
With the Visit Mobile and the Pride Month banners. And now this is the response to it. This is him in September during this month to celebrate children. He thought he would take the opportunity to do that. And so now you've got, it's definitely a back and forth, and it's something that the city of Mobile probably, when they quote-unquote innocently started this idea, they had no idea it would get to this point. Also, it's a big story in Lanyap as well. We're going to talk to Rob at the bottom of the hour, so we'll kind of get his take on this too. But it's a big story, and if you go to any news outlet or just on social media, you'll see all the chatter about this for sure.
Yeah, it's blown up on social media. Also, a lot of commentary this morning on that story out of BC Rain. A couple stories involving schools from MCPSS. One that we're waiting for more information on, which just, you know, on its face sounds absolutely ridiculous. I don't know what MPD could come out to say today that would make me think otherwise, but four parents arrested yesterday after a fight at Fondy Elementary School, right there on Cottage Hill and Azalea. Police responded to the campus yesterday. Authorities confirmed one person was even tased during the incident. This is on an elementary school grounds. The Mobile County Public School System says every student remained safe inside their classroom while Mobile police intervened. I don't know exactly what time in the afternoon this was, if it was as school was letting out, or because they said students were inside their classrooms.
The idea that four parents would be on campus would indicate it was probably around time to pick up.
That's what I was thinking.
Drop off or pick up.
And I hope there weren't any children, especially any of their children, who witnessed this. But if this is something that you get down with, fighting other parents in elementary parking lots, then it's probably something that you do the rest of your,
the rest of the day.
The rest of the day, too. Yeah. So these poor kids. But we're waiting for more information today from MPD regarding the confrontation, and so far no identities have been released of those arrested. The other school story here that has gotten tons of texts today, and the story came out yesterday, but more information from Kate Sherman at WKRG News 5, who spoke with a parent. Mobile County school officials and police investigating after five students became sick after a classroom celebration at BC Rain High School. One parent, Brandy Watkins, says her son had difficulty walking, struggled to remain alert, and suffered dangerously low blood pressure after eating two brownies distributed during his first period math class on Monday. She said her son and at least one other student were transported by ambulance to a hospital. That doesn't sound like your average bad food sickness.
No, it's just kind of falling out. No, it sounds very, very serious.
So the initial blame went to the whoever made the brownies using mayonnaise instead of cooking oil, but while that might not taste the best, it's still, nothing that would, you'd think, send you to the hospital. The school district says testing found no drugs in the brownies. Watkins disputes their explanation on the mayo and says she still wants answers about what caused her son's condition. He was released from the hospital Monday night, and Mobile police confirmed they are also investigating the illnesses. And Squirrel Vereen says Mayonnaise can be toxic if left at room temperature for a long time.
Okay.
And then he ties it into the Pride Month thing. We'll get into that here in a little bit. And, well, actually, we've kind of gone a little long in this segment. So we'll come back and give you all those texts you have on the Mayo Brownie incident at BC Rain and the fight at Fondy. And how do you feel about those banners now, the city not allowing private businesses after September, I guess, to put their messages up there?
That's the end of that right there. 822 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. That text line is 251-343-0106. But Dalton is correct. We've got a lot that's already been texted in that we need to get to.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton at 825 on Mobile Mornings. Text line 251-343-0106. BA on the brownie says, sounds more like Miracle Whip because Miracle Whip is nasty. So I've never, Miracle Whip is a mystery to me because you have mayonnaise.
It's a miracle to me.
It's a miracle, but he says it's a nasty miracle. It's not, I guess Miracle Whip is not really mayonnaise. I don't know what it's a mayonnaise substitute or what is it?
That is not in my domain.
I don't know. I've never had Miracle Whip. I've seen it a million times, but don't know what it's all about.
I just grab that store brand mayo and go
off
on my
go,
way.
Yeah.
That's right. Bacon Wrapped says, for one, let them give God his rainbow back. It does not belong to them. 2 cents. If they would contain their crazy members that go after our kids and want them to cross over or whatever else they think they could persuade. Backstrap Stacker, back to the mayo brownie incident. If that's what we're calling it, said bad eggs, mayo on brownies is nasty, but it had to be bad eggs. And then he says, actually, that sounds like a poisoning with the brownies. Well, my thought was, do we know? Because there were 25 kids in the class. 5 of them became ill, 2 apparently ill enough to go to the hospital. Were those 5 the only ones who ate from the brownies, or were the rest of the class just A-okay afterwards? I don't know. But is there a possibility that there was something else that the kids were doing that maybe hasn't been announced by them yet? I don't know. We're still waiting to see what comes from this. But Paul says we shouldn't be feeding them. And I imagine he's talking about in schools, maybe just stop giving food out. We seem to see stories now nationwide, but all the time about weed making its way, or weed gummies, or, you know, some kind of weed product making its way into things that are being cooked or given out in schools. And I know it's nationwide, but it happens relatively often. So maybe we are at the point, and it absolutely is not cool, because you're looking for any kind of break when you're at school. You don't want to do classwork. And if they say, hey, we're having pizza, hey, we're doing this, hey, we're doing that, then you're like, all right, that's great. Well, now, you know, if this is going to continue to happen, and then if we keep having more, was it the mayo incidents? Then, yeah, we shouldn't give food out to the kids anymore.
Well,
just don't deal with it.
So, yeah, did we not have a marijuana incident in Mobile in school? So marijuana in the food?
We may have.
Maybe in the past year, haven't we?
That's ringing a bell.
And the other thing is, too, like, I leave the cooking up to the kitchen crew at schools. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea to prepare food as your teacher at your house and bring it to school and then dispense it among the kids. The things that can go wrong as opposed to things that can go right, there problems like this. Well, it's like was the food left out too long, or who knows, or whatever. It's probably just, I would put a lid, MCPSS. I know you listen to every word I say, and you're big fans of mine. So if you would listen to me on this, I would restrict teachers and teachers' aides from bringing food into schools.
That's terrible.
It's not terrible.
For generations, we've been able to, you know, potlucks and all kinds of things.
The exchange needs to be the kids to the teacher with the apple.
Okay.
There's your food exchange. The kid walks in. It's day one of school. You meet Mrs. Hampson. She seems nice enough. She's got that weird mole, but you give her an apple anyway, and you try to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
That's the only food exchange, aside from going to the cafeteria, that I see makes any sense.
By the way, if I'm a teacher, I'm not eating anything any of those kids bring me. No chance. I know what those kids are up to. I'm not eating any, even an apple. That's a poisoned apple, by the way. Damn Yankee says, how about checking the BC Rain students for drugs and alcohol and not the brownies?
That's the theory.
Billy D says, you nailed it, man. I got it. I got a funny feeling they got to find out one of those kids probably passed around some gummy bears or something like that, and that's why they got sick. It had nothing to do with the brownies, without everything to do with the celebration. Dirt Digger on the daylight saving time, swing and a miss, it appears now, that the Senate is not picking up the Sunshine Protection Act from the House.
Yeah.
So back to the time change for us in November. He says, I don't understand why they just moved the time in November 30 minutes and set the time permanent. I'm tired of this time changing every year. I was born in standard time. And someone else, I can't find the text, but they said, this is, you know, 80% issue here where most Americans want to stay on DST. How come Congress can't get it together?
Is it 80-20?
I think it's about an 80-20 issue, at least,
really?
Yeah.
Okay. 8:30 now. It's not 8:20. It's 8:30, and we've got news straight ahead, and then Rob from Lanyap on the way.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Two people are dead, along with the gunman. A mass shooting at a Minneapolis high-rise apartment building. The call of shots fired came in yesterday afternoon. Five people wounded, including two Minneapolis police officers. They're hospitalized in stable condition. It is a big deal, an oil deal the Trump administration has hammered out with Venezuela. Energy Secretary Chris Wright says,
turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 835. Got a chance of rain as we head toward the weekend, according to Dr. Bill Williams, who will have that weekend weather scale in the morning.
He sure will. It'll be a three-day scale with Labor Day extending the weekend. And 8:35 now, time to check in with our Thursday reoccurring guest. That's Rob Hulbert with Lanyap and online at lanyapmobile.com. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing just
doing good,
fine.
Man.
And I know the cover story this week, we're talking schools and school systems and on both sides of the bay. Over here, Sims, the city, they're looking at potentially breaking off from the Mobile County Public School System. And I know that has created some debate. And they're at one point in this, and then you also have Fairhope, and there's been some strange things there with some studies being done and meetings called off. Are these two at about the same timeline here, or are they kind of just basically tell us a story where we stand on this?
Yeah, I think Sims is much further along in the process of probably breaking away and doing their own thing than Fairhope is. Fairhope seems like, you know, they've had some internal polls done there that seem to suggest that most people still are happy with the Baldwin County school system. I know there's a smaller group of folks that are pushing to have Fairhope leave that school system, create their own. But I think in Sims, you've got a larger group, and, you know, the mayor seems to be pretty much behind doing that. I think you may see that there far sooner than in Fairhope.
You've got two communities there, if I can say, you know, they're very different. They're not much alike. I would have thought that Fairhope would have been the city that would have had the resources to pull this off, and that for Sims it would be more of a struggle. So maybe it's just a matter of will. Also in Fairhope, you've got an organization I know that they raise money for. It's kind of an independent organization that helps kids with testing and keeps their test scores up or something like that. Anyway, it's an educational foundation that works in the background to fortify those schools. And I think some of the seems to be the dialogue in Fairhope is, look, we're already affecting our schools with that organization. We don't really need to be, you know, kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, for Fairhope, it's sort of it seems a little more like if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing.
Right.
For the most part. And I know that they, you know, the mayor called off some additional meetings.
She did.
To really discuss all this. So, you know, I think that it's certainly nothing that is you know, a front burner at this point. I don't think it's going to be, you know, something that's going to happen immediately. It doesn't appear that way.
Mm-hmm.
Sims is much more, I think, they're looking at it much more seriously, I think, mm-hmm. at this point, and have a lot more people behind the idea of leaving, you know, doing what Sarah Land's done, you know, and
Chickasaw
school system.
Yeah, good luck replicating what Sarah Land's done, because they've done it. It's been phenomenal. If you've been up to those schools,
yeah.
And the athletic facilities and all that, I mean, they just have created a place where people want to move.
And maybe their success is why so many other municipalities are looking to try to do the same on this side of the bay.
Now, I would say, maybe.
I think that's very true. I mean, I think you look at what they've done, and there's, you know, some of those other communities out in that general area are like, you know, hey, look at this. You know, it's a little bit of an arms race, maybe. And, you know, I think there's also just the feeling that the Mobile County Public School System is humongous. And it also, I think there's a lot of feeling that most of its resources go to Mobile and to, you know, the inner city schools here and the, you know, schools that, and they're not getting maybe what, you know, everything they want.
Hmm. Yeah, can you know,
that just is the feeling, it seems like.
If they feel that way in Sims, imagine the way they feel in Citronelle or Bilobattery or these places that are, you know, stretching the map north to south. You know, what kind of attention do you think they feel like they're getting? If it's correct or just perception, they're like, we need this, we need that, and probably feel pretty ignored.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you look at Sarah Land and you look at the growth there you know, a lot of those communities are growing pretty rapidly, and I think Sims is another one that's grown pretty well. And, you know, I'm sure they look at it and think, you know, this would only help what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. Total opposites on what the constituents want. And in this story, you have the public surveys listed here. In Fairhope, 83% of the respondents say they don't want to leave Baldwin County Public Schools. In Sims, 75% said they would prefer to have their children attending city-owned schools. But I wondered, too, you know, with this kind of side story that's continuing to go on with Mary G. Montgomery and the football suspension, this kind of adds another element, too, with Zach Golson being let go and suspended, and they're even moving him within the school system. He's now filed suit, and included in that suit is the superintendent of Mobile County Public Schools, along with the MGM principal. Those are two of the names listed.
Yeah.
But for people that back Golson and don't feel like what he did warranted that kind of punishment, I think even more of a bone to pick with the school system that maybe, feeding that fever a little bit more.
Yeah, we don't mess with the football coaches now. Come on. You know? I mean, I agree with you. I think it doesn't help Mobile County Public School Systems in that regard either, as far as keeping Sims in. I think all those things are coming together in that capacity. And, you know, I mean, Sims is a city that wants to grow. I don't think Fairhope is a city that really wants to get bigger. You know, they fight a lot of development and are sort of, you know, they kind of want to stay the way they are a lot of times. And that's a key part of, it probably is a big part of all of this.
Well, they're doing a bad job of it. They're trying to stay the way they are, because the growth in and around Fairhope, and it might be outside the city limits, Rob, to be fair, but boy, that growth is incredible on 181 and beyond.
Sure.
So that's something that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And let me note, too, with the Golson suspension, now that did come down from AHSAA, but I have a feeling they don't think MCPSS fought hard enough for them and for Golson, and that's kind of where that is right now. And then I think a lot of people in the MCPSS don't want to see Sims leave the school system, so that's creating more energy in that dispute. But there's a lot. Go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just saying, you know, the school system, of course, you know, the school systems never want to see the cities leave. They don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not in favor of that happening. So, you know, it's money that leaves the system, and it's, you know, they would prefer to keep what they've got.
Also in Lanyap, reporting on both the governor's race and the race for lieutenant governor, and both now facing residency lawsuits after one filed regarding John Wall, who's running for lieutenant governor, his residency. As far as the Tuberville lawsuit, I don't know if this was a masterclass in legalese or not, but an August 24th deadline for political parties to amend candidate certifications. The Tuberville legal team asked for a deadline to be extended previously, and then they were granted that, and it fell after that August 24th cutoff. So now they're saying, hey, we've gone too far. Now you can't take him off the ballot. As far as you know, is this lawsuit dying? Are they going to continue to fight this, or what are you seeing?
I have no idea what, you know, it is like, as you said, it was kind of a little bit of a, I mean, I don't know if that's exactly how it was planned, but it sure came off that way. That, you know, it's like, okay, give us an extension. Oh, well, the extension, now we're past this critical date. We can't do it anymore. I still think that I have a hard time believing that the Supreme Court is going to abdicate its power here, because I think if they say, yes, look, this belongs to the political parties and the legislature and not us, I think they open the door to a lot of similar types of claims later on, you know, and if they don't make those decisions, I mean, that's not saying that they would decide in favor of Tuberville or against Tuberville. I just don't see them letting that authority go and agreeing with the concept that they don't have the ability or the power to make a ruling in this situation. So I do think they're going to do something in that regard. I mean, they may come back and say, hey, we're rejecting this case because of X, Y, Z, but I don't think they're going to come back and say, yeah, you're right, Alabama Republican Party, you guys have the power and we don't. I don't think that. I would just be very surprised if that's the case.
You know, it's also interesting, too, that the race itself between Tuberville and Doug Jones doing a lot more groundwork, and it looks like it's paying off a lot tighter in the polls than what happened the last time the two opposed each other. Doug Jones is he's a known entity for sure. He's known around the state. Like him, not like him, whatever. You know who Doug Jones is for the most part. And you know who Tubbs is too. So it's just kind of interesting the way Tuberville, of course, still a U.S. senator. So he's got those duties in Washington, D.C. But there seems to be a lot of grumbling on the Republican side that Tuberville's simply not campaigning enough to this point. Heck, we're only 2 months out.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I think, and when he is campaigning, he's saying things that, you know, I think when you come out in a full-throated approval of data centers, which are very unpopular on both sides of the political divide, that doesn't help you. The residency issue that just won't go away. And I mean, you know, I think most people can look at the residency issue and say there's a lot of smoke there. Regardless of how it ends up being determined, it still comes off like he spent most of his time there. Those are issues. Those are tough ones. I think even the Social Security rant he went on was not a great one for him, because, you know, I don't think people who are on Social Security want to hear it's a scam and it should go away, because, you know, I think they want to hear it needs to be fixed or needs to be improved, that kind of thing. But he's made a lot of statements that are tough for him to win folks over, and it does come off a little bit that way. And
a little detached, right? He's not really aware of what the people are thinking.
I would say so. If I were his political advisor, I certainly wouldn't be telling him out and tell everybody we need as many data centers as possible.
I think he is listening to the people, because he did amend his take on data centers this past weekend,
right,
where, you know, he's not for a year moratorium like Doug Jones is, but he did say that the people shouldn't be footing the bill for these data centers, and that he thinks that local communities within the state should make their own rules. But he's still, you know, he's kind of, like you said, doing two jobs at once. He's the senator and Trump wingman when he goes on a lot of these shows, and he has to say a certain thing for that. But also, in a race where he's still a heavy favorite, he's still running for governor. So it's almost like two different jobs and two different personas you kind of have to have.
Yeah, you know, it's. I think a lot of it, you know, is, again, is he going to get the turnout that he wants. I don't know how charged up, you know, in the primary, I was very shocked to see in Mobile County that we had more people vote in the Democratic primary than in the Republican primary. Mm-hmm. And when I went back and looked at that, certainly in recent history, it was not even close. It was very strange to me. I'm not saying that that's happening all across the state, but it just is a strange one. I would say that Tuberville, of course, is still the odds-on favorite to win, but I do think it's going to be a closer race just because of, Tommy's done a lot of things that you would say, well, you know, that's kind of the wrong thing to do to win this race. I still have, you know, I would say that, you know, if it had been Will Ainsworth, this wouldn't even be a discussion.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think he would be governor hands down, no problem. It wouldn't even be an issue.
He'd be more buttoned up. He would understand what's at play right now. And if the things that you say resonate with people regardless, because you're a U.S. senator, well, how do they resonate a month or two before an election where you're trying to become the governor of the state? You just have to be really careful what you say and how you say it at this moment in time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any. Everybody can look at the data center issue, for instance, and say, okay, these things take tremendous amounts of energy. And if we're going to just have bunches of them in Alabama, where does the energy come from? I mean, that's a simple question anybody can ask and think about, you know, and understand. And it's not one that has been answered. And so regardless of whether you're, you know, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever it is, those are things that I think the average Alabamian can look at and think, you know, is this going to end up costing me more money from, you know, for my power bill? Is it going to be a drain on the, you know, on the grid? What are capacities? I still go back to this. I've said it 100 times. Is why can't we just know what our capacities are first? Somebody needs to put that out there and say, here's the capacity we have to do X amount of data centers before we really have to change the grid or before it could affect people. And that hasn't been done. So, mm-hmm. you know, it comes off when you say we need these and we need them all and whatever. It comes off.
It seems
really slapdash and kind of like you're not really thinking about anything that average people will deal with.
It's not what the truth is. It's what the perception is right now. And I think there's more confusion than solid understanding of data centers. And that's why that comment kind of came off as, you know, little odd for a guy that wants to be the governor of the state.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's hard to know everything. I don't know what deep feeling is about them either. I mean, you know, when you see videos and things of you know, one of them, and the noise is just unbelievable. I'm like, how could anybody live near that? That seems insane. And they say, well, that's not the way it is now. Okay, well, show us what we're going to be dealing with now. And you look over in Louisiana, and they're building one that's going to use 4 times the electricity that New Orleans uses. And it's like, okay, that seems like a lot. How are they going to handle that? So, I mean, it's moving quickly, and I think people have a reasonable level of anxiety about it. And I mean, you know, we have there's a little bit of fatigue with all that stuff, and I don't think he's really addressed that very well. And it's, I mean, along with the other issues, the other attendant issues he has, it's just been another drag.
Well, there is a data center in Mobile, and it's called the Lagniappe Mobile Offices.
Oh, yeah.
Most of that data in the heads of Scott Johnson and Kyle Hamrick and so many.
You hear the noise that place makes.
That's when they're bickering each other who took somebody's sandwich out of the fridge.
if it was only sandwiches, it's usually donuts. But anyway, yeah.
Well, you guys have the latest issue on stands now and, of course, online as the stories are published. For someone who wants to sign up online, pretty easy to do when they get to Lagniappe Mobile.
That's right. Just sign up. It's a dollar for the first month and $9 a month after that. Just 30 cents a day, folks. And it helps keep us rocking and rolling and putting out news every day.
All right, Rob. Thanks a bunch, man.
Y'all have a great Labor Day weekend.
Got it. Rob Holbert from Lagniappe. Go online, lagniappemobile.com. And we'll come back and wrap things up on this Thursday edition of Mobile Mornings. Let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show and get to the text that we can at 251-343-0106.
Stay on top of big news and the local beat with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Up next, the Jeff Poor Show.
That's right. And right off the rip, the beginning of the show, he'll talk with a man in the news again, Pathway Church Pastor Travis Johnson. And I'm sure he'll be discussing these banners.
You think so?
I think that might be part of the discussion coming up here in just a few minutes.
See that coming.
April Marie Fogle with 1819 News comes on in the 10 o'clock hour, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, Stephanie Holden Smith with the Alabama Policy Institute set to join the Jeff Poor Show.
On the text line, unnamed texter says, what about Jones support for all those Democratic policies? Boys and girls, sports, illegals, you know, anti-ICE. Yeah, I mean, this was not an endorsement of Doug Jones at all. All I was saying was, you know who he is, and that Tuberville may have tightened this race a little bit with some of his comments, but you certainly have got to factor in all that Doug Jones is before you go to the ballots.
Well, yeah, and I think while the data center and flock camera discussion may make things interesting, along with some of the issues nationwide the Republicans are finding in polling, I still don't think it's going to be that close, and it's because of what the texter pointed out there.
Yeah.
There's too many issues that Doug Jones is on the complete wrong side of. And I know that, you know, that last segment discussing whether or not Tuberville sounded a little unattached from, you know, what the constituents think about the data centers, but I don't think Doug Jones is any more in the mix and in the know of what Alabamians want. To me, it sounds like he just takes, not from the DSA, the Democrat Socialists of America, but he's taking things that, like, Kathy Hochul's doing and then just copying them word for word. She was the first to come out and do this one-year moratorium for New York State,
yeah.
And it was the same week where he came out with his same position.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think he's trying to win this race, and like you said, he has all the time in the world to work on this race. Tuberville
turned him into the unemployment line by beating him years ago.
Butterknife says, I don't believe Doug Jones supports men and women's sports. You know,
I think
I'm not,
he does.
I'm not sure exactly where he stands on that.
I think
that.
He does. Okay. I think I can check, but I think he does.
I'll have to, yeah, look
I
in.
Think he's on, yeah, he's on that side of it.
Let's see. Monty says, I moved to Sims in the 90s for the small town feel and rural life. The mayor seems to be the one that wants to grow it. Most do not in my circle. But, Monty, was that only a matter of time when Sims incorporated? Because then at that point, you know, growth is kind of necessary, right? If you are your own city, then it's something that you have to have. And but I understand completely what you're saying, and I imagine that a lot of people in Sims feel the same way that you do.
You're going to have to go a little further west to Tanner Williams. You can find that country life all over again, I guess.
So, yeah. And John says, I'm glad to see Mobile County school system break up. The reason for this is when local officials are recruiting industry, then the Mobile County School District is not left completely holding the bag. When the industry officials come in looking for a location, local recruiters can't at least say, if you don't like these schools, then maybe you will like those, which are separate from the county. We'll continue this conversation and likely a whole lot more. And remember, tomorrow, Football Fridays with Feinbaum, presented by Bryant Bank, starts at 8 o'clock.
Dan and Dalton, see you tomorrow beginning at 6 o'clock in the morning.